I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lenten Rouge Cycling Podcast for the awards show part two. And you're listening to this on Monday, I think, or maybe a bit earlier. Depends on how quickly we get it out. Then we have Benji and I going to Paris on for the Tour de France route reveal. We'll then have our reaction after that. And we may have a part three for the awards show. But this will be a more traditional categories of best domestique, best time trialist, who is the best GC rider of 2022, who is the best team, and who is the best cyclist in the world in 2022. So the part three, I was thinking, depends, let us know if you'd be interested in it, more fun categories like biggest miss, which is the Jai Hindley Award from our takes on my take, most clutch performance, biggest dog act, can think of a few, biggest deviation. I think Benji mentioned off air, most disappointing transfers. I reckon they could be pretty fun. So we can be easily convinced if you'd like a part three with those categories. But what have you been up to, Benji? Have you watched any movies?
I have not watched any movies. I've been rewatching Game of Thrones with my girlfriend as she hasn't seen it. And I'm kind of like in the mood of like the early seasons being amazing. And hopefully she doesn't realize that the last two seasons aren't that amazing. So I guess we'll get there eventually. That's what I'm doing so far. And yeah, I've been enjoying my days. But hey, I've also been prepping the Giro d'Italia preview for next year already. So I don't know what I'm doing. It's October and I'm already delving into it.
I know, that's your route. If you haven't listened to that episode, we went in depth into it. It's a pretty interesting route, actually. Since you asked, I watched also on the flight over to Australia, I watched Nobody. Terrible. It was just Bob Odenkirk. I don't know how it has 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes used to be good, and now you can't trust it anymore. Like, I don't know what it is. Back in the 2010s, yeah, I didn't think Nobody was very good at all. Anyway. Before we get into the best domestique rankings of 2022, I'll give you an update on my Zwift progress. It's going well. Thank you for following me on Zwift. As I said, an hour a day, except when I'm in Paris. So no abuse in the comments when I'm in Paris in the middle of next week. An hour a day, and that can be split up. 2x30, that's the beauty of Zwift, is I hop on in the morning, get the heart rate going, and it's actually, I'm comparing now, and actually, let me show you, I've done this before, showing people on a podcast when half the listeners are listening on audio. Let's show you the weather in Andorra right now.
Wow, thank you, my friend. The audio.
You see that?
The people who are watching the audio podcast are going to be like, well, where's the video?
The camera now. that's where I'm too soft for that. It's like 9 degrees, raining, ain't happening. I'll hike in it, no problem. And Toby, if I don't take him, he'll beat me up. But the beauty of it is it's dark at 8 a.m. I get up, get on Zwift, crank out 40 minutes, 30 minutes, doesn't matter. And now I have my ghosts chasing me, the PR ghosts, which I actually quite like having, experiencing that. And I feel a lot better for the rest of the day. And then I probably do a little bit at the end to wind down. But yeah, that's my general. It's going well. Haven't missed a day yet. So I just thought I'd give you a little update on that. Any feedback from you, Benji, on Zwift, on my progress? Are you my coach?
I don't know. You're already finding excuses to not have to train in Paris. Then again, you don't have a trainer there.
I can't bring. Mate, have you seen budget airlines? How much it would cost to bring a trainer on on Vueling or EasyJet? Yeah, it'd be cheaper to buy a new trainer in Paris.
Yeah, on my end, in a few days, I'll be going to the Zwift offices actually, because I'm aiming to potentially do my first FTP test at the Zwift like lab in their building. So. I'm already dying thinking about it, so I'm scared. Help.
That sounds pretty good, actually. I'd like to hear the feedback or what the lab looks like. I'm sure that'll be on Twitter. So keen to see that. Anyway, Men's Awards Show Part 2, Who Was the Best Domestique of 2022? We have some big iconic domestique performances with, I feel like, Satellite Riders. Use went up this year, Benji, probably because everyone listens to the pod now. There's just lots of notable examples of it. There's also notable examples where there was the chess match where even if it didn't work out, you could see teams were trying to get riders in the break, like McNulty on Pegur. There was Kamner, Van Aert on Altacam. I feel like, do we overrate those? How do we balance those before we get into the discussion of the riders? Balance those really high-profile ones against the guys in the trenches doing the dirty work, pulling from 50Ks to 15Ks, keeping guys in front position like a de Klerk, like a Van Hooydonk.
It's very difficult to balance that. It's very difficult to compare a performance of like a Vervaeke who was on Sierra Nevada compared to a de Klerk early on in Eduardo de Vlaanderen, for example. So it's basically subjective on what we both watched and what we both experienced when watching the races. So that's how I view it, at least. And there's multiple aspects to that. You can also say like, oh, are we not being a bit more biased to World Tour riders by experiencing more the World Tour races? And then there's like some legendary domestique in the Conti trenches that we don't know about that will just pop up out of nowhere in a few years. Who knows? We don't know that. But we'll talk about what we know. And like you mentioned, Kemna is one of the riders that can be mentioned, was an essential satellite rider in the Giro d'Italia on stage 20 and also had some chances for himself, but that's not to be judged in this domestique award. So he played a big role in Hindley's victory at that Giro d'Italia. Wout van Aert played a role in Vingegaard's victory at the Tour de France, was in the break so many times, both for himself in the green jersey, but also for Vingegaard as a satellite rider up the road. And these are two examples of satellite riders. Another example is Thijs Benoot, where he was a satellite rider once in the Tour, but that didn't really work out that stage. So that was not
His job was to pull the brake, so he kept the gap for Wout, I think, because he'd crashed and he was a bit injured, I think.
Yeah, and next to that, he was also part in the cobble season, part of the team that tried launching Wout van Aert and Laporte, also in some races as co-leader. So he's like a bit of the balance between a co-leader and a domestique, so we got to keep that in mind as well. Wout Poels being a strong domestique for Landa at the Giro d'Italia, very underrated performance, I think, in my eyes. I think at certain stage he was there with the three best climbers in the race. So that defines being a super domestique at its core, like in his heydays back in the day when he was at Froome's side. Oh, wonderful performances by Wout Poels as a domestique in the past. But then we've got three other riders, and two of those are the ones you mentioned as well. And Nathan van Hooydonk is one that is a strong domestique early on in races. And we saw that in the cobble races, but also in the Tour de France, where he played a role in controlling the breakaway. And at the cobble races also was used to be sent forward in groups, which is also kind of a domestique role because you're playing the bait up the road. So you're being forced to play the bait in favor of your team leader. So I consider that also a domestique functionality in a race. Ben Turner also very strong on the cobbles and the hill classics. The way he destroyed on Amstel half the peloton on those consecutive hills before we saw the launch of Kwiatkowski and Pidcock, that was ruthless by Ben Turner. And we saw that in many races that he did. Sorry, what?
Tour de Hungary, he did the huge lead out on the hill for Dunbar, and Dunbar couldn't finish it off. I know it's a 2-1 race, but like he can climb all right on shallow gradients. Even was he in the Vuelta? He was in the Vuelta, right? I swear he did the run-ins into the base of climbs, and then Ineos didn't do anything, but he kept the guys in front too. So he was good for a lot of the year, whereas like Kamner I knock because it's just a one-off.
Yeah.
And then he's largely a stage hunter. Sorry, were there any last candidates for you, Benji?
I think the biggest underrated one for me of the ones that I haven't mentioned is probably Valentin Madouas, because there is no bloody way that David Gaudu ends fourth in the Tour de France without Valentin Madouas by his side, because that man saved Gaudu's soul multiple times during that race, brought him back to groups multiple times, was by his side on every single climb, threw away all his own chances in the Tour, because this man can win a Tour de France stage, I'd say relatively easily, but he's by Gaudu's side, and he's part of that fourth spot of Godu. So that's one of the writers that's in there that I do put very highly. But are there names like, what do you think about it, Tim de Klerk this year? Because he couldn't really show it due to the injury early on, eh?
He was sick or injured. He just didn't race enough in the big races. Rein Taramé, I'd put out there for Jan Hirt. I think Taramé was proved to, like, he was just a good domestic for Jan Hirt, UAE Tour, and then in the Oman, and then I can't remember, maybe in the Giro, I think. I think Taramé was good. It's tough because I'm sure there are guys, right, who are bringing a guy back, a GC leader who's in the 7th to 10 region in a World Tour GC race, stage race, and they bring him back from, say, Group 2 to Group 1, and they do it a couple of times, but we don't see it on TV or on cameras much. We don't really notice as much. So, and you can't go on PCS and look up best domestique rankings. Like, it's very subjective. And maybe Madouaz, I don't have in my top three. Ooh. I acknowledge hugely important for Godu in the Tour de France, but ultimately he helped a guy get fourth in the Tour instead of sixth. And it's maybe because I didn't watch or I can't remember in February, did he help in Fournardèche and Drôme Classic, the French one days? Did he help in other stage races? Maybe I'm knocking him a little bit, but I can only go off what I remember. Like, are there any other, did he do anything else? Because in the Classics, he was a co-leader.
He was co-leader, but I do remember him playing a role for Kung in one of the races, as in riding in a group where Kung was a part of, for example. But that aside, I do want to mention, are we underrating the super domestiques of UAE and Jumbo a bit? As in, we haven't mentioned the Sepkus, who was on this list last year. We haven't mentioned a McNulty or a Soler, who have been playing a role for UAE. A Mikel Biel, who played a role for UAE, but was very inconsistent at the Tour de France. Where do you rate those performances compared to the names we've already mentioned?
And the UA guys know. McNulty was good on stage 17, but otherwise didn't influence any outcomes for Pog, I don't think. Soler was solid, but was a domestique for one race, the Tour, and on Galibier made a huge mistake. And then Bjerg is not very good. So Bjerg is part of the reason they had so much trouble in the Tour. So, no. Kuss, Houtenkamp, huge pacing. Like, Kuss' performance on Houtenkamp, right, is more important than what Van Aert did. Yes, Van Aert dropped Pog, but that's only because Kuss paced for 15, 17 minutes at a really high tempo. Kuss was very consistent. He's paced on Pogacar, shut it down. It's just, it's also one race. You know, and I'm really looking at work across the season. So that's why I have my list, Nathan van Hooydonk first. I'm giving it to the men in the trenches. You go from the Classics, Benji mentioned he was baiting. You have Paris-Nice lining up stage one, Calais stage, keeping them in position on his own in the run-in from 25 Ks, and then launching the climb. You have the whole Tour de France. Jumbo Visma had significantly less problems in the sprint stages or mixed stages when Van Hooydonk was on the front, and he did a good job in Denmark. And yeah, he was just good. So I have him first. I have Van Aert second. I think when you single-handedly save the guys to win a one-week GC, that counts for a lot.
Paris-Nice.
Tour de France. I think him being there, like, cobble stage was weird at the start. I think there was a few mistakes there from him in particular, but then he ultimately did pull Vingegaard back. Then Houtenkamp was great, of course. And I just more think the threat of him up the road and him sacrificing in that sense in the last week and a half, Pogacar, I think, it played on him a bit. So I think he was hugely important in the Tour. And, yeah, so I have him second. And third, I have, who do I have in my notes? Turner. I think Turner was absolutely class. Classic stage races throughout the year. You know, even, like, I know I'm mentioning Tour de Hungary, but I think he could do even more. I think he can do even more. And I have him third.
I get that. Now, my list is different. Let that be clear. Doesn't mean that it's completely different because you've got two of the same riders in that top three, but the third spot is different. I don't have Van Aert in my top three, and I agree that Paris-Nice is an event where he fully rode himself away to save that GC of Primož Roglič. So that's a light point that would deserve him a top three spot. I agree with that. But I went more for three riders that completely rode their own chances away, chances that I think they do have in certain races, to be a complete domestique in parts of the season. And the third spot for me is Valentin Moduels, because I do value that Tour de France domestique performance. But because, like, when you say Van Aert did that at Paris-Nice to save the victory for Primož Roglič, yes, but I find it more gloryful that Moduels threw away all his chances to get someone to fourth position completely. I think that's also spectacular. So that's why I've got him in third spot, Valentin Moduels. I rate him, and I hope he gets a lot of chances next year, because he's an absolute goat and he can top 10 every monument. That I've been saying that for 17 years, but it hasn't happened yet.
He's quite big. Yep. Sorry, just to interject, Moduels, I think I mentioned this before. He and Pinot, I was not having breakfast with them, but the day after the Champs-Élysées stage, they were down at breakfast in the same hotel. And Pinot looks like Pinot does, skinny, you know, I think about 6 foot, around there. But Moduels, big guy. Like, he was way bigger than I expected. And for him to climb like that, and that means, the reason I mentioned that is the draft benefit he provides is more than if it's a Pozzo or Evenepoel. Like, he must provide a lot of benefit as a domestique, up, down, flat, wherever.
Yeah, I agree. I've got Ben Turner in second, also a name you mentioned for your top three. I think it's a strong domestique. Threw a lot of chances away at the Cobble season, where he might have been one of the stronger riders at the team. And even in Roubaix, for example, they're playing that two-up game. They're rolling attacks on the others in that group, which Van Baarle ends up riding away from. The factor that Turner is there is also a form of domestique work for Van Baarle, because he lifts pressure off Van Baarle to have to do it alone. Yeah, he was probably co-leader at that point in the race, so it's kind of on the edge. I'll agree with that. But the work at Amstel and so forth, and you said it, at the Vuelta, going towards the start of climbs, keeping riders in position, that's vital as well. And he did that in so many races. And that brings me to my first spot, which is also Nathan van Hooydonk. And one factor that I think you didn't mention, one event that you didn't mention, was at the Tijenberg, I think, in E3, he was also the one that lined up the entire peloton before they got to the Tijenberg, where eventually we had the attack of Laporte, Wout, and the group that they eventually went within that race. So that's also a very vital moment that gave them a lot in that classic. And in all the classics, he played a big role. In the Hill classics, he played a role in Amstel by going up the road early. In the Tour de France, he played a role by working early on. He was a satellite rider in some stages. He was vital for the Jumbo-Visma team, and I think he's the best domestique in the world. And let me call out Belgian media for a second. I love my Belgian media journalists, but the Cristallen Fitz, which is like a trophy that is given in Belgian media together with the Flandrien trophy, they both have a domestique award. And they gave it to Benoot.
Two awards.
They gave it to Benoot and Van Wilder, and not Van Hooydonk. And even Benoot said afterwards, I didn't deserve it. Van Hooydonk deserved it.
So, what did Van Wilder do?
Well, Van Wilder did play a role in the Vuelta, but I'd argue that it's on the edge with Vervaeke. Like, both these riders could be named to be top in domestiques.
Vervaeke was better.
I think Vervaeke was more vital at the right moments. For example, the Sierra Nevada satellite rider moment for Vervaeke, that's a goal-like performance. But I do believe if Van Wilder is in the breakaway that day, he can do the same thing. So it's kind of the quick step tactic, choosing Vervaeke instead of Van Wilder, makes us put Vervaeke above Van Wilder, in my opinion, in this ranking.
Oh, San Sebastian on High Iskabel, Vervaeke was good too. Yeah. I think, yeah. Anyway. I don't know how you have two awards shows, but that was our domestique rankings. Let us know if we missed anybody or what your rankings would be. Who was the best time trialist of 2022? This was a tough one because there was no out and out outright winner. We had a very unusual winner of the World Championships at over $100 odds, Tobias Foss, but otherwise he was, you know, not competitive for winning World Tour TTs for the rest of the year. Yes, he came second in Chrono de Nation. We got Kung, who was close but didn't really do well in World Tour TTs, but then second at Worlds. Ganna had a down year, but he still won a couple of World Tour TTs. Bisigal won the UAE Tour TT, then crashed in the Tour, and then was yeah, just not that close to the other guys. Pog was okay, like consistent. And then there's Van Aert, who didn't do the World Champs TT, which is a big knock in this category for me. I can't put him first. I cannot put him first if he didn't do the World Champs TT. Yeah. Are you in the same mind?
I'm in the same mind. And like, we talk about the likes of Tobias Foss, Pogacar, Ganna, Bissiger, Kung, Evenepoel, Van Aert. And the thing with Foss is he had the one great time trial, which was the World Championships, where he won. Like, he won that from a very outsider position. And throughout the year, he was not as successful as a time trial is. So it's also very difficult to say, oh, this guy deserves to win. It's very difficult, this category. But if we look at the season and we look at the results, doesn't Tobias Foss's World Championship victory make him the most successful time trialist?
No. It's like if someone won the Tour and literally did nothing in any other GC race for the rest of the year. I wouldn't make them the best GC rider. You have to do something else in other races. If he'd had a second in a Giro TT, I don't think he did that well in the Giro TTs. I should check, otherwise I'll be Giro TT 6th and 8th. So that's like, and those TTs were not stacked in quality. The prologue at Deutschland 9th, Algarve 4th. So he didn't podium another. I just can't. No, for me, winning world champs does not automatically make you win this award or even get in the podium.
I agree with that aspect. Now, that makes it very difficult, huh? If the guy that won the World Championships is not the winner and the guy that was the best time trialist at the Tour is not the winner, then who is left over? You've got Stefan Kung, who gets second everywhere on 1 second and 2 seconds every single time, except for at the end of the season where he ended up being the victor at the Corona de Nation. So that's a race where he did get a victory, but it's also not the most important time trial of the season. It's kind of that thing at the end of the season that everybody reminds themselves of early October. Okay, we've got a time trial this week. I forgot
Doesn't
about
count.
It.
It's irrelevant.
Okay, completely irrelevant according to you, and I understand why, because I also kind of agree. When it comes to Filippo Ganna, let's stand still by his performances for a second. We know that he doesn't have the best season when it comes to on-road time trials. We see him getting the victory at Bessèges, Provence, but those are races that are not necessarily the highest races in the world. Let's be honest about it. UAE Tour, where he gets second in that time trial behind Bissiger. He's back at Tirreno, winning the initial ITT ahead of Remco Evenepoel there, 11 seconds ahead of him. And then we look at the Dauphiné, where he ends up winning ahead of Wout van Aert. So he's beating two of the other best time trialists in the world. But again, the Tour de France, not that great. Europeans, he loses. World Champs was not good. Obviously, let this be clear, I don't really care about the UCI hour record and his track time trial performance for this road cyclist award. This is completely about road cycling for me. So, and I had a bad season. It was a failure of a season if you just look
he
at his road cycling.
All his main targets.
Exactly. But where does that put him for you? Does that put him outside of the top three? Because if we look at pure time trial strength, I'd argue that he's the best or one of the best time trialists in the world, but on 2022 alone, he didn't do it for me.
He's still in my top three, but you have to, yeah, like his big target was taking yellow in the Tour de France. He didn't do that. And then his final TT came fifth, and then World Champs, he was non-competitive. So, like,
is he washed?
No, he's not washed in terms of TT, but in terms of actual road cycling, non-TT races, Ganna's one of the most overrated riders in the world. Like, every year. It'll happen again next year. Oh, should Ineos go for Ganna and MSR? It's like, are you serious? Like, I know he can beat up guys in Tour de Provence on the flat, but yeah, he's... People think he's someone he's not in classics and road races. But in terms of TT, I have him third. He still won two World Tour level TTs. He came second in another. He won his national championships, podium Europeans, and won a smattering of others. So I still have to put him third. I have a Wout van Aert second because he won a Tour de France time trial. If he'd done Worlds, he would have podiumed it probably, and yeah, he won a Paris TT as well, second in the Dauphiné. So that edges him out over Ganna, having that Tour de France TT, a second and a first, even though Vingegaard might have eased up a bit in the final TT. And then I have Evenepoel first because he turned up to Worlds. He podiumed. He won the Vuelta TT by a huge margin. He won Belgian National Champs TT, which is competitive, won Swiss TT, and Basque second, Tirreno second, Algarve first. So, yeah, I have Evenepoel best time trials in the world.
Okay, I think I've got one difference in that top three where I don't have Ganna in the third spot. I've got Tobias Foss in the third spot because I believe that despite him not being overly performing throughout the rest of the season, except for Corona de Nacion where he got second, but that's an irrelevant race as we just heard, like winning the World Championships deserves you at least the third spot in my opinion because it's the best or the most important time trial of the season. Yes, if you're not consistent throughout the season, that's what happens. Like it can happen and it might mean that you're not the best time trialist and like physical strength, but this year alone, if you can do that, I think he deserves a top three spot. And therefore, I put him above Ganna, who had a failure of a season on the road when it comes to his time trial. And that is likely to be the other way around next season because I think Ganna will do the Tour de France again in preparation for also World Championships in Glasgow with both the track and the time trial. So I think Ganna's probably going to be back in the top three for me next year, but this year I put Foss above Ganna because of the actual results that they delivered. I agree with your top two. I've got Van Aert in second, Evenepoel in first, and people are going to think like, oh, Belgian bias, but it's, in my opinion, it's the truth. I think Van Aert is essentially a better time trialist than Evenepoel at its core, but if you don't show up at the World Championships, the most important race to prove it, then sorry, man, like, you can do whatever you want. That's your problem. You're not in the first spot here. And Remco Evenepoel is the winner for me.
I think so. I think if Van Aert does World Champs TT, he probably takes this out, but he didn't. So that's what it is. On Foss, though, I would say I kind of hope that the World Champs TT win is a turning point for him in his career. And second in Chrono de Nacion, I think he was only like 2 seconds behind Kung. Like, that isn't a joke performance. Like, it wasn't like Kung beat him by a minute. I hope.
He's going to win the time trial at the Giro.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I was getting to in that I hope he just gives – I frankly hope he gives up on GC at the Tour, all that sort of thing. He's 25. He's a big guy. Like, he's 6'1", 6'2". He's, I think, listed at PCS at mid-70, 75 kilos. Remember Wiggins, Wiggins Froome, that no one's winning the Tour at 75 kilos against guys like Pog, Vingegaard, who can TT with the best, or Roglic, or Mas, or Evenepoel. So I kind of hope he leans into what I think he's naturally better at, which is being a powerhouse. And he's got a lot of watts. I think chasing the watts per kilo to compete with the guys who are naturally closer to 63 to 65 kilos is going to be... I think he's going to spend a lot of years frustrated doing that. So I think if he does commit to or stick with, okay, I'm going to race at 73 to 75, keep my absolute power. I agree, Benji. I think he can be a consistent top three in World Tour GC time trials or Grand Tour time trials next year. We'll see if that's what he does. But yeah, that was the best time trials awards. Evenepoel unanimously number one. Now for the big one. I don't know if this one would be controversial. Who is the best GC rider of 2022? We've got Mas second of Vuelta, and he was good in other World Tour GC races, but he crashed. Hindley won the Giro, then fifth at Tirreno, but then I think like 11th at the Vuelta or something. Roglic, Paris-Nice, Dauphiné, crashed out of the Tour, crashed out of the Vuelta. Remco won the Vuelta, failed in all other World Tour GC races, but did well at Valenciana and Algarve. Pog, second at the Tour, won Tirreno, UAE Tour of Slovenia, and Vingegaard, second Tirreno, second Dauphiné, second Crow race, and won the Latour. What's your first thoughts, Benji?
Firstly, when it comes to the likes of Enric Mas, getting his third, second at La Vuelta now. So he's continuously getting the same spot across the years. Is he necessarily getting better? I do believe that Mas is getting stronger over the years and that this was probably his best half season, the last 6 months that he's had in his career, most likely for Henrik Maas. So I'm pretty hyped about him, but I don't necessarily put him on the podium because there's more riders that did more in the season that won more Grand Tours and so forth, like a Jai Hindley who won the Giro d'Italia, but then was weaker when he went to the Tour de France afterwards. I'm actually not certain if it was a Tour or the Vuelta anymore. But
Hindley did Vuelta.
Okay, he was sent to the Vuelta and eventually didn't really do it there. So it was really only that Giro for Jai Hindley, and it's really inconsistent throughout the season. So that's also like a minus point for him, in my opinion, despite winning that Giro, which is high up on my list. Paris-Nice and Dauphiné being won by Roglic, who ends up crashing out of the Vuelta, crashing himself out of the Vuelta into Fred Wright. So that's kind of his own fault. And then we look at the Tour de France where Heibel just drops in front of him, and it was because the motorbike ahead kind of hit it and it ended up on the road ahead of him. So that's unfortunate and not necessarily his fault compared to the Vuelta crash, I would say. But looking at that, it's a combination of bad luck at the Tour de France combined with the factor that he didn't really prove it in the bigger races because he crashed himself out in some races, like at the Vuelta. And we've seen that across the years of his career as well, that happens often. He's crash prone compared to other riders, let that be clear. But he's still one of the better GC riders in the world. He has those capabilities in the time trial, in the climbing, and has that punch at the end of races as well that is so feared by other riders. So that's what puts him in the top four for me, whether that's on the podium or not. I won't reveal it yet. The other three names are obviously Jonas Vingegaard, who won the Tour de France, second at Tirreno and second at the Dauphiné, and second at the, Tour of Croatia behind Matej Mohoric because he bottled it in an intermediate sprint in the last stage. Anyway, like, if we look at these performances, Jonas Vingegaard is the kind of rider where after the Tour de France, you'd think, where was he all this year? But he was there, second at the Tirreno and second at Dauphiné. He was just in the shadow of Pogacar at Tirreno and Roglic at the Dauphiné, at which he was, in my opinion, still a better rider than Roglic. We said it during our Dauphiné recap that we thought that Vingegaard was a stronger rider on the big climbs in the last weekend of that race. And Tadej Pogacar then, second at the Tour de France, winning Tirreno, winning UAE Tour, winning Tour of Slovenia, last of which I couldn't care less about because he was basically stomping his own teammates. And I'd argue that he's probably the most complete GC rider in the peloton because he's less crash-prone than both Vingegaard and Roglic. And I'd argue that when it comes to his ability to be good on all terrains, he's better than Vingegaard. His weakness at the Tour de France was the longer climbing and also the fact that his tactics on stage 11, Granon stage, weren't necessarily the best in the world either, but that's also part of the team side, I would argue. Remco Evenepoel is the last one that is also on this list for me as potential winners of this trophy, and that is because he won La Vuelta a España, but he flopped in Tirreno and Swiss and the lead up towards the Vuelta. So that's also the inconsistency that matters. I think La Vuelta is a turning point for Remco Evenepoel that he will be more and more consistent throughout the next season as well. So I wouldn't necessarily see that as a horrible thing. But first of all, before I give my top three, do you have any takes on these riders and what would you argue is your third spot on your list?
Third one's tough between Roglic and Evenepoel because how do you balance two World Tour 1 weeks with a Grand Tour? And then, you know, Roglic was still good in the Tour, but they crashed, but then the crashes are often his fault, but then the Tour one wasn't his fault. It's tough. Then Evenepoel, you know, he won these Dot Pro GC races, but yeah, it's not like he was coming fourth or fifth. Actually, he came fourth in Basque, so that was kind of, he was still there in Basque country, he was still wearing the jersey, and actually Roglic, I think, was injured in that race, and they rode for Vingegaard. So I put Evenepoel third over Roglic. I think his Vuelta performance was really impressive, climbing and TT, and even though he crashed on Sierra de la Pandera before then, I think he was really good. Pogacar arrived second because Vingegaard smashed him at the Tour, and Vingegaard was also, I think, would have won the Dauphiné, you know, on if he was just the out-and-out leader. But he wasn't, but he was very strong at the Dauphiné and he was good at Tirreno too. So yeah, I have Vingegaard first, Pog second, and Evenepoel third. And I think Maas might have been third if he hadn't crashed so much this year. He was really, really good, stepped up a bit.
Okay, time to get controversial, no? Time to get controversial. When it comes to my third spot, I agree. Remco Evenepoel over Primoz Roglic, which in its essence, I would still argue that if we put Roglic against Evenepoel in the Tour de France head-to-head 5 out of 5 times next year, I'd argue that 3 out of 5 times Roglic would end up on top, but mainly due to the team strength of Jumbo. If that was like a 1v1 without Pogacar and Vingegaard in the picture, just because of the team strength, I put Roglic above Evenepoel in that race. But this year, that was not the case. This year was clear to me that an Evenepoel was better at the one Grand Tour that he was focusing, while Roglic could not make it work at the Tour de France and the Vuelta, both because of crashes, but also just throughout the season, not overly consistent, only ended up winning Paris-Nice because of Wout van Aert by his side, which that would have been a real choke if Wout van Aert wasn't there. So we'd add it to that choke list he already had from the past. When it comes to my top two, time to get controversial. I've got Jonas on second, and I've got Pogacar in first. Because I believe that Pogacar is the most complete of the two when it comes to GC. And I would argue that both of these riders, with limited team strength, Pogacar comes out on top every single time. I think Jonas still won the Tour de France because of the team that surrounded him. And Pogacar has won the Tour de France a few times without the team surrounding him. I believe that in its essence, Pogacar is a better GC rider than Jonas Vingegaard. I agree that you could just as well put this the other way around because Vingegaard won the most important GC race. But I think that Pogacar is the better GC rider when we look at his abilities.
I think Pogacar can maintain a peak longer throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
If maybe Jonas had won by 10 seconds and Pog had beaten him in the final TT and taken time back, I could get on board with it. But Jonas completely ruined him in the Tour. Like, every climb, he was superior, not just the long climbs. I believe he could have dropped him on Pogacar. Pogacar couldn't drop him on the Jalabert climb. And then the TT, Jonas was far, far superior, the final one. I acknowledge that if you sent both of them to the Giro next year, I'd take Pog every time.
Yeah.
Because there's 3 high mountain stages. Odds are one of them is going to be rainy and cold. So I would take Pog for that. But I just don't want to overrate his cold weather ability. Yeah. I think TT is a wash between the two. And I don't think it's the 50-minute, 40-minute climbs that Pogacar's weaker than Jonas on. And I think Jonas was a little bit undercooked, or I think he had an Achilles injury or something. Was that last year? I can't remember.
Last year, I think.
I don't know. I don't think he had ideal preparation earlier. How much do I value UAE Tour Pog winning that? I don't, to be honest, because it means so much more to him than anyone else doing it. So, like,
I agree.
He has to win it.
But the thing is, Jonas didn't win a single GC race outside of the Tour. He got second every time. So,
but Dauphiné, I'm practically giving him.
I get that.
Yeah. So that's why I feel like Jonas was essentially on top level at another World Tour GC race, like the Dauphiné, and was very good there. So, yeah, I see the argument for Pogacar. He still won 3 stages. How do we value stages in this? Because he obviously is much more capable of winning stages. I don't really.
Consolation it's just prize.
Pure GC. Next year, we'll wait to see what the Tour de France route is to see who will come out on top, because we only know the Giro one for now. Anyway, next category, 2 more left. Who was the best team of 2022? Why don't you start us off, Benji, on some outsiders?
Let's talk about Bahrain for a second. Last year, the team that punched above their weight quite significantly, with Colbrelli winning Roubaix. I think that was last year, at least, because I'm throwing all the years to each other at this point. Mohoric doing great at the Tour de France. Turns winning a stage at the Tour de France as well. Plenty of stuff happening throughout the season. And I'd argue that they took a step back this year. Yes, Alanda still podiumed the Giro d'Italia. Mohoric still won Milano Sanremo because of his dropper seat post, and the motorbike.
Because of the motorbikes.
And his good descending. I think it's also to be said that he was probably the best descender regardless of the dropper seat post and regardless of the motorbike. It would have been close, but I agree that it would have been different. Now, I think Bahrain took a step back, and I don't think they're in my top three compared to last year, where I think they were in the top three of both of us. So that's significant change when it comes to our top three. Another team that disappointed in part of the season was Quickstep. Like, their classics was not good, and that was due to injuries and bad luck when it comes to the Clerc being out, for example. Stibar and Lampard out in Paris-Nice, bad preparation towards the rest of the classics for them. Asgreen having COVID during Algarve and having to build up through the classics towards being at a decent shape at the Tour of Flanders to then puncture at the top of, I think it was the Koppenberg. So that man had some bad luck. The worst timing to have a puncture at the top of the Koppenberg. But it happened. So, hey, that's what happens. Then Alaphilippe, bad luck. Strade crash, getting taken out by his own team. Quite Brabant, Sepel, his crash at LBL, his crash at the Vuelta. Like, his entire season was being ruined by that. And I'd argue that the only light point in there then was Jakobsen winning sprints and Evenepoel winning the Vuelta and LBL. So that significantly saved them quite a bit. But I'd argue when it comes to this
TT.
Lampard TT.
They got lucky with that, yeah.
You're right. I agree with that. When it comes to Jakobsen, though, like, the sprint train wasn't there every single time. And I'd argue that was weaker than the combination with Bennett last year. So that's also one part where I'm like, that dynamic in the team wasn't perfect this year. So I think they're out of my top three as well, which...
They're nowhere near mine.
Yeah, I've got our
I think
teams.
They were significantly worse than last year.
Yeah, I agree. Like, then Ineos, a team with Pidcock, Sheffield, Turner, Van Barle, Kwiatkowski doing stuff in the Hill Classics, doing things in the Cobble Classics. Thomas at the Tour, not necessarily getting much help from Yates, in my opinion. He was kind of like going for his own GC. Pidcock being sent in breakaways a few times and then dropping out of GC, but still winning a stage. I think they could have played tactically better in that race, for example. But overall, I'd argue that they're definitely a strong team, with even Carlos Rodriguez being good at the Vuelta, but then being, having his crash and eventually dropping out. Otherwise, he would have beat Ayuso, of course. Like, in our 1v1 battle we had between Ayuso and Rodriguez. Otherwise, Rodriguez would have been higher. Nah. But their time trials, one point. Sivakov and Carlos Rodriguez's time trial at the Vuelta was next level, for example, compared to what we expected from them.
Actually, just pause there. I hadn't thought of this. Do we rate staff, equipment choices, ooh, nutrition, training in this? I hadn't thought of that, because, like, Intermarché, for example, do they go near the top three because of the base level talent and how they got it to perform? Do UAE get knocked because of the talent they have and then the results might be below what we expect? Do we rate, or is that just represented by the results? The results are a function of the competency of the background staff.
I've got Intermarché in my top three, so I guess that answers your question in some shape or form, because they punch significantly above their weight. Not necessarily winning a monument, for example, but it got close with the Hermans at LBL, for example. Well, relatively close, considering there was a rider up ahead, quite a bit ahead. So that's still a factor that matters. De Vrindt being up there when it comes to Roubaix. Christophe getting back to his winning ways. They set up a lead-out train pretty strongly as well. Binyam being out there at the Giro. Gent-Wevelgem, a victory for them that is basically close to a monument, as Gent-Wevelgem is, together with Strade, that race that people are like, oh, they should be monuments. But hey, it's not the case. They just overperformed on so many levels, because they were able to have riders that were not necessarily the top talents overperform. And also they had the top talents like a Binyam being able to break out and actually make it work. So I do very much rate that. I want to add to my Ineos statement earlier for a second. Ineos is probably one of the teams that rode the best as a team, because I'd argue that their Roubaix, Amstel, and Brabant's victories were an advantage of, were a consequence of using a numerical advantage in groups and getting away that way. So that is a factor there. UAE and Jumbo are the last two teams, and I'll let you talk about them for a second. What's your take on those two?
So UAE is the Pog show. It's for, I like Ayuso, but, you know, next year I think he'll win a lot more. He didn't win a World Tour race. And for the team stuff, I really only care, for this award, I care a lot about World Tour races. I do count Koerner and Brabants. They are, the start list quality is World Tour level for those particular races, but largely I just care about World Tour races. And I say that because UAE send they do such a big calendar. They do a relegation battle calendar. They were like having guys at all these Italian classics last week. Veneto, like Hirschi won the Veneto Classic. And like, frankly, I don't consider that in this award. I care about World Tour races, particularly when you're spending at the top end of the sport. That's what matters. And I think UAE, they had two World Tour level one-day races, Strada, Montreal. Montreal is a good start list. That was a good race. They won a monument, Lombardia again. They won, apart from that, two World Tour 1 weeks, and then second in the Tour, third in the Vuelta. And so Pog is really doing the heavy lifting there. And you look at Almeida, Ackerman, McNulty, Bennett, a lot of other riders on a lot of money, they're not winning that many World Tour races. McNulty did win a nice Paris-Nice break, I think. So only 18 World Tour level wins, no Tour de France win. Last year, I think it was only 14, but they got the Tour de France win. And I think they won five Grand Tour stages this year. So I actually have them nowhere near Jumbo-Visma this year. I actually have Ineos ahead of UAE in second. I have UAE third just because, like, it sounds weird to say, because Ineos' budget's huge, but I think their talent this year are kind of on par with UAE, maybe a bit less because you don't have Pog, and they're, you know, second in RVV, winning Roubaix. They won, I think, three World Tour 1 weeks with three different riders. They got third at the Tour, podium at the Tour as well, even though I know Thomas is nowhere near Pog. And then they came second in the Giro, so that matches Ayuso's third at the Vuelta, and Carapaz won three stages of the Vuelta. I think they won UAE won six Grand Tour stages and with three TDF stages, and UAE and Ineos only won four and only one TDF stage. But I just think, like, UAE are so bad in all the cobbled classics, apart from RVV when Pog is there. Like, they're not even a top 10 team, that I have to knock them. And without the Tour de France win or another Grand Tour win, I have Ineos ahead of them. And Jumbo, yeah, it goes out saying, really. I think they're clearly the best team in the world this year, winning the Tour de France, Dauphiné, Paris-Nice. Missing, they didn't win a monument, did they?
They did not win a monument.
Okay. Yeah, and Giro. They won two Giro stages, which is better than last year. And then on the alternative program, Coy's winning a lot of races. I know they're not World Tour, so I have Jumbo first. So Jumbo, Ineos, UAE.
When it comes to UAE, I've got them on fourth. Because UAE doesn't deserve to be in the top three because their team tactics are fucking horrible. Like, I've spoken to professional riders in the last month, and I was not bringing up anything when it comes to UAE. And those professional riders bring up the fact that UAE's tactics are shit. Like, if a opposition of UAE brings it up in a conversation that's completely not about UAE, then there must be something wrong with the tactics at UAE. And we see that in so many races. Like, Lightweight Leah is the perfect example of having shit tactics but still winning, because they had so many riders at the front of the race. They were all riding against each other, and one of them ended up winning. Lombardia? What? Sorry?
In Lombardia. They did the same in Emilia and the same in Lombardia.
I don't...
It relies on Pog being the strongest.
And he was.
And I think... Yeah, he was. Well, he wasn't in Emilia.
True, but it's a different
race. And they lost.
I'm not 100% okay with the Lombardia example.
He would have won easier if they sent Ulisi up the road in a small group.
Potentially. But it worked out.
We both agree that we don't think their tactics are great.
Yeah, I agree. And we see that in also the way they respond to adversity in moments that they don't expect it. The way Almeida was caught off guard so many times throughout the season. It can both be tactics, can both be him as a rider that isn't ready for those moments. There's moments where Soler was sent up the road where he wasn't used as a satellite rider right on time, and all those kind of small things that line up that are just not on point. It's like there's an issue in the team car there, and I hope they fix it to see what happens if it's fixed next year. Because that, like, imagine UAE, but with goated tactics, they win the Tour de France easily, no?
No. Well, unless suddenly they sign me and me and you turn into godlike rulers, and they can have us managing breaks in the tour, which they didn't fix that in the off season. So, I mean, I more see them now more capable. They really, at a minimum, they should podium every Grand Tour.
Yeah.
And they should be winning at a minimum one a year, at a minimum. Yep. And, like, you can't have Ayuso, Almeida. And Ayuso, he came third in the Vuelta, so, like, he did do that, and he's, like, a child. But Giro, they got to be trying to win the Giro next year. And I don't think they will, because I don't expect Ayuso and Almeida to have great... I don't think they're going to use those stages where you can use two leaders, satellite riders. I don't see it.
I don't even expect Ayuso to be at that race. I think Almeida's going to be sending their solo leader to the Giro, and we'll have him podium the Giro as third, which I'd be rooted to see. I like seeing Almeida as solo GC leader.
He got COVID this year, right? In the Giro?
He would have been likely on the podium if that was not the case.
True.
So he can.
That's a knock. But then every team, like Bahrain, Colbrelli has the heart issue, the guy who won Roubaix last year, and Haig crashed in the Tour, and then because his injury was quite bad, he couldn't recover in time for the Vuelta. Remember last year, crashed out of the Tour, but there was time for him to do the Vuelta where he came third. Every team has these things. So I just look at it as evened out. Like Yates, everyone gets, you know, Sivakov got COVID out of the Vuelta. Maybe Ineos come fourth with that.
And, like, this is the fun aspect of it, eh? Everybody's, like, valuing within teams, the team classification of the UCI points. I want to go for that. UAE has mentioned, I think Machin has mentioned that he wants that when it comes to UAE. That's a goal of them, but I don't really care about that. I think most people within cycling, most fans, don't give a crap about that ranking. It's probably just their UAE sponsor that said, we want to be the best team in the world, and Machin will be like, oh, here's the list. We're the best team in the world. So, if that's a sponsor request, I understand that that is the goal of UAE to do that. But in essence, in the sport itself, it's completely valueless. Just like the fact that teams are bragging about having the most victories in the year when they go shopping for victories at the Tour of Croatia and the Tour of Hungary. I couldn't give less fucks whether it's Jumbo and Quickstep. I want to see them win at the biggest races, and that defines what happens. Anyway, Randover.
Well, we can prove that. Can someone go and check the likes on the Instagram or Twitter post when Jumbo won the Tour, like their big post of winning the Tour, versus this week with their most wins or like number one in the ranking post? Because, like, and obviously, like, a Jumbo, like, winning that, they know winning the Tour is the big deal.
Yeah.
It's more UAE where I'm like, wow. Because, like, Coy doesn't get sent to all these races to farm wins, he gets sent as part of his development plan. Progressing as a young rider. Same with Ineos. Ineos don't go to Sede Mana because they're like, actually, we want to break 50. Maybe they do, but I don't think it's a priority. The reason they're at Sede Mana with their young riders Dunbar. Is development. And or to increase Dunbar's trade value. There's no trades in cycling. last work. You remember when Lefebvre did Hodge a big solid? He got him to win a couple of races and then he got a UAE contract. So yeah, Tour de France is unfortunately overwhelmingly important.
On to my podium then. My podium is Ineos in the third spot. I do believe that winning races as a team
you
is very valuable.
You can't have Intermarché second. Wait.
Maybe they're first. We're not there yet. Ineos in the third spot. And Ineos, with their ability to win as a team, having youngsters show up at races, overperforming like a Sheffield showing up, a Turner showing up, and really working together. I think the one youngster that hasn't performed at the level that they were hoping for necessarily was a Kim Hajduk, who has shown at Paris Tour that he still exists. But I feel like that is valuable. And I feel like they're tweaking their essence of the team a bit, not only to road cycling, like they got Ferran Prevot in there as well for off-road in the future, but also Ganna when it comes to track, Viviani when it comes to track, Pidcock when it comes to cyclocross. I don't value these things, so that would probably boost them a tiny bit, but I don't give a crap about non-road cycling in this podcast. This is road cycling, men's cycling, and
facts.
Still, Ineos is third. And that says a lot. Intermarché second, because Intermarché punched so far above their weight and performed so well with so many riders that you wouldn't have expected to perform at that level before the season started. And I believe is it Eike Visbeek? Or who was the guy that is performance manager now at Intermarché? Someone,
Jan Bakalant said he was the man behind all the stuff, and he's out, isn't he?
Yeah, he, I don't know. I think he's going to Bingo. I'm not sure.
Bingoal is how it's pronounced.
Jesus fuck, it's back.
I think Intermarché are going to have a downward year next year, actually.
Well,
I think they're going to... They only won 5 World Tour races, including Gent-Wevelgem. Three Grand Tour stages, though. Lowest budget
in World Tour, I'm pretty sure.
New sponsor
next year, though. Intermarché Circus Wanty, it's now called. So we're getting 74 sponsors instead of 47 for them next year. They got 47 sponsors, by the way.
That's so stupid. Like, hey, sponsor us. you get no exposure. Like, I don't know. It's the Androni model. It's tough.
How much you get Lantern Recycling Podcast on, like, the 1 centimeter, like, at some point on the back or something of the shirt? How much do you think it will cost?
$5,000? $10,000? What do you reckon? Can we probably provide goods in kind? what goods or services can we provide? Because their social media guy or girl on Twitter is like on fire now. So, yeah, maybe we can't really help with goods or services. Who do you have won, Jumbo?
Well, before we get there, I do believe that Intermarché as a team will have a down year, but Binyam will rise up again and will probably show up at the Tour de France, probably win a Tour de France stage and level up a tiny bit compared to this year. Yeah, he might not be able to win again to Gent-Wevelgem again or something, but he will be up there in the classics more than he was this year, because now he won't skip RVV, I hope, in 2023. Let's hope so, at least, that he just doesn't run away just before RVV like he did in 2022. Nonetheless, Jumbo-Visma is also the first for me. I think it's pretty straightforward. Strongest team at the classics, got hit by COVID with Wout at RVV, mechanical scratches at Strade with Benoit and Laporte at RVV, and Wout and Laporte at Roubaix. But all teams have those. And regardless of that, they still got results. One failure in the season is that they didn't get a monument. I believe a team like that should be getting a monument 100% in the season. And I think Milano Sanremo is an opportunity where they could have gotten that if they got two riders over the Poggio, for example. I think Roubaix and Wout at Roubaix, bad luck throughout it. He was probably one of the strongest riders in the race, if not the strongest, to get away with Van Baarle. But hey, it did not work out because they also had Laporte dropping out because of his wheel collapsing halfway the race. So all these tiny factors. Tour de France, by far the best team in the race. Like, team performance was great. Tactics when it comes to satellite riders up the road, and that giving Vingegaard the protection of having someone up there just in case Pogacar attacks behind, that makes so much difference. The danger of Wout van Aert being up the road, stuff like that. Olaf Kooi with his sprints that is going to level up next year. Thomas Stieg's being able to go for races. Benoit, for example, at Dwars of Vlaanderen and Amstel, getting close despite not really having the finishing skills, and that shows by the fact that he didn't win those races most likely. But there's so many things we can talk about Jumbo's season. And another failure, though, their Giro was, sorry, but outside of stage wins, a team like Jumbo should not be getting just 2 stage wins at a Giro. They should be getting a GC podium at the Giro.
But how? It's not like UAE. They don't have...
Kelderman next year? It's happening.
Who?
Kelderman next year. It's happening.
No, but that's what I mean. They don't really have much depth in GC riders. It's not like UAE. Like, UAE and Ineos have more second-tier GC riders. Like, because Dumoulin was... I never thought, like, yeah, he couldn't climb this year. So they really just have Roglic and Vingegaard. And... yeah, I don't know. I think the Giro was fine given the squad they sent. Would have liked to have seen Kooi, but yeah, missing the monument. But still, I think if UAE won the Tour, UAE, I don't know. I don't know how much it swings. But yeah, them. Any last thoughts, Benji, before we go to best rider of the world?
The weakest part of Jumbo-Visma was whoever signed off on that Roglic versus Ride article. That's one thing I wanted to add when it comes to this. But outside of that, I think it's pretty on point that they're the first here, and I rate Intermarché second place. Goated. Anyway, who do you think will win next year?
Jumbo, again.
Okay, actually don't know.
Jumbo-Visma didn't have that much luck this year. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying they had a lot of bad luck, but I'm not saying... I don't think everything went their way either. Roglic crashed, wasn't his fault, in the Tour at least, crashed out of Vuelta. Van Aert got COVID for RVV, and then the wheels collapsed in Roubaix. So I don't think everything went their way, except the weather and the tour was pretty toasty. I think that was helpful. And so next year with Kelderman, Tratnik, Van Baarle, it's strong. And it's also like Benoot, Van Hooydonk, Laporte. They're not old. Like, it's not like Quickstep where Stibar and others seemingly really fell off a cliff. Maybe they didn't. But their guys are in their primes too. So I think they'll be better next year.
I think Quickstep will be better next year, closer to the podium. I think UAE will step up and be on the podium. So those are the changes I see happening here. And I expect Ineos to like stick within that top three as well. So that's the views I have on it. I don't necessarily see like a team outside of those like ones we named that will suddenly show up out of nowhere and be in the top three necessarily. Like a DSM, I don't see moving up. A Bike Exchange, I don't see moving up.
DSM, those kind mate, of they're aspects. Getting relegated. They're so bad. You seen their signings?
Sean Flynn is a legend, my man.
I'm sure he is. But they're favourites to be relegated. Okay. They were worse than Astana in a points basis, I think, this year. I'm pretty sure. And Astana, like, were a comedy team this year, except for nearly fourth Giro.
If we really work on relative to budget performance and Astana, like, oh, next level. They were literally broke at the start of the season. So whatever they did was miles ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, DSM, man, not looking good, bruv. Anyway. We might do worst team of the year in the part three. Now it's the who's the best or who was the best cyclist in the world in 2022. I know I always flip-flop, so I had to write my notes down. Van der Poel, not as good this year. Shouldn't have done the Tour de France and stayed in the Tour way too long, I think. And then World Champs, we all know what happened there. And Van Aert, green jersey, Domestique at the Tour, Superdom, and one stages, Omloop, E3, but no Monument. And then we've got Pog all round. We've already mentioned his victories in the one days and the World Tour races. And Vingegaard Tour, second Torino, second Dauphiné. Evenepoel, one La Vuelta, World Champs, and LBL. I have Van Aert third because he was winning World Tour races, both one days, start of the year, during the year, and then green jersey. He just, you know, he got COVID and then his wheel failed at Roubaix, and they also missed that Ineos split. I have Evenepoel second, won World Champs. Can't do better than that. Third in the TT. And then I have Pogacar first because if you mix together his GC results and one day results, I think undoubtedly the best rider in the world this year.
I think when it comes to Mathieu van der Poel, I want to add that he did win RVV, so that is big raise.
Oh,
and he did
true.
Do well at the start of the Giro, for example. But we expect more than just one monument performance and the Giro, for example.
Third MSR as well.
Yeah, that's true. Doesn't shout top three for me in this list right now. And while I do think that he's one of the best cyclists in the world, I feel like he stagnated compared to previous. Is that harsh to say? Like, because he won RVV before, he won Tour de France stages. Would we argue that Van der Poel stayed on the same level and not necessarily added something else to his arsenal?
Nah, I think he was better this year. I think his programming and scheduling's not great. I think Domestique support was not great this year either for him and Alpecin. RVV, I think, was a harder race this year. Watts wise on the climbs, I have to check that. He just shouldn't have done the tour, or they should have pulled him when he wasn't looking good. And then that meant he couldn't really go back, recover, target, you know, I guess he was targeting Worlds, but not great.
I do think that much of Van der Poel, with the transfers that have been announced by an Alpecin, like a certain Kurt Andersen and Sefov joining the team, will be more successful in the Classics next season, where he might win two Classics races instead of one, for example, a Monument and a Classics like Nitri or something, because I do feel like the team strength getting better around Van der Poel will have an effect next season. But that's a bit more for Alpecin team preview that will come towards the end of this year. When it comes to my next name, Wout van Aert is also a name I have on my long lists, my short lists, That doesn't make any sense, but you know what I mean. He won the green jersey, like you mentioned, but also the super domestique factor. Winning Omloop NE3, I'd argue, is partially him being one of the best combos in the world, but also the factor that he is developed by such a team around him. Like, that helps him in those classics races because the team factor is really important in those races. But there's one big lacking factor, and he does need to win a monument. Like, I think Tom Bonin put in Belgian media the other week that a lot of people are saying that he's the best he could have been. That was the best he could have gotten this year, green jersey and so forth. But Tom Bonin said, I disagree, he should win a monument. And I fully agree with Tom Bonin that Wout van Aert should win a monument. As simple as that. Otherwise, you cannot be called the best cyclist in the world. You have the skills for it, but it doesn't work out this year. And yes, the bad luck at RVV and the bad luck at Roubaix has a factor in that. So perhaps next year is the year that he gets that monument again, like he won MSR in the past, for example. When it comes to the other three names that exist, the Vingegaard is pretty obvious, eh? He's in that long list, like winning the Tour de France. But yeah, second that, Thierry Nodolphin, we mentioned it in our GC riders discussion already. It's very valuable winning the most important race in the world. I think when it comes to Evenepoel and Pogacar, it starts becoming difficult. Let me first decide my third spot, and I would put... I think I need to put Jonas Vingegaard in third because he wins that most important race in the year, and I personally value GC above classics a tiny bit, and as a consequence, Wout van Aert kind of falls out of that top three for me. And perhaps people might disagree there, but that's my take on this. You could just as well have it the other way around, I would say. But the factor of winning the Tour de France, you need to be put in the best cyclist in the world right now as a consequence. But my top two is where it gets difficult, because that's where I've got a division between the most successful rider of 2022 being Remco Evenepoel, winning La Vuelta, World Championships, LBL. That's simply the most successful rider of this year, hands down.
Is it?
I think it is.
Second at the Tour is bigger than winning the Vuelta.
Not better than winning La Vuelta, LBL, and World Championships. World Championships is as big as winning the Tour in cycling. Close to it.
Pog won three TDF stages, a monument, Strada.
Remco's world champion!
I know, but... like, Remco, it depends how you weight. So let's say that's worth a monument. That's two...
That's worth more than a monument for me.
Is it? I guess in terms of sponsor exposure, it is. So let's say he's won 2.5 monuments. Like the, yeah, nah. I don't necessarily agree that Remco is the most successful. Like, he bombed before the Vuelta. He bombed everything, right?
Except LBL.
LBL, sorry, except LBL.
I see where you're coming from, but I disagree. That's a polite way of saying fuck off. No. I think when it comes to La Vuelta, World Champs, LBL, I think I rate that higher than getting second at the Tour de France when it comes to successfulness. He is the most winning rider of 2022, Pogacar, but I don't give a fuck about Slovenia victories and so forth. So sorry.
He won Tirreno. He won Strade, Tirreno, Montreal, UAE Tour. Like, it's not just like he only won Slovenia and then second of the Tour. He did a lot of in World Tour competition. He ruined Remco in Tirreno.
I still think that Remco Evenepoel is the most successful because he won more important races than Pogacar did. I think that that's pretty vital in being most successful for me personally. But hey, we can agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And just to say the other thing I wanted to say, I still think Tadej Pogacar is the best cyclist in the world. Because him as a rider, Pogacar as a rider is way more complete than any rider in the peloton. I think Wout van Aert is also very complete. I think some riders are very complete. Amadouas is pretty complete, but it's probably not in my top five at all. It is, obviously. But I think Pogacar is way more complete. The classics, how he's able to do that, next to being one of the best GC riders, next to being one of the better time trialists in the world. Despite that, I feel like UAE's time trialing has completely fell off a cliff since they switched to their new TT bike at the Giro. Is that the reason? I don't know, but I feel like I noticed that. And just in general, Pogacar getting so close on all these disciplines and all these different races is what puts him up there for me. Now, if Remco Evenepoel shows up at RVV next year and is competing for the victory, he might become the best cyclist in the world next year, but currently it's still Tadej Pogacar for me. That's it.
So that's all. So we've got the same 1-2. Pog 1, Evenepoel 2, you got Jonas 3rd, I got Van Aert 3rd. I think it's tough doing these at the end of the year because I also forget, you know, what happened in the spring classics exactly, or the 1 week spring races or Basque Country, etc. But yeah, let us know your thoughts. Who do you think it will be next year? Will Remco, he hasn't said what race he's doing. They said they've decided what Grand Tour they're doing already, which of course is completely insane because we don't know the Tour de France route yet. So that suggests to me that he's doing the Giro after they've seen the Giro parkour, which, you know, good for the race. But yeah. Tour de France, baby. The sport is the Tour de France. Like, I'm sorry, but the Giro, the viewership different. Like, if I'm Quickstep sponsors also, I'd like, get that Rainbow Bands jersey to the Tour de France now. Unless RCS are paying a big amount for him to go to the Giro, because it's incomparable, the exposure difference and the importance between the two races, which is a problem for the sport, but that is the current reality. But yeah, any last thoughts, Benji? Anyone who's a rider that could jump into? Yeah. I think Ayuso is going to push the top three next year.
I think Yuzo is going to push the top five next year. Top three is a big one. By the way, just to mention, why is it so difficult for a sprinter to become seen as the best cyclist in the world? Because I swear that only in the high days of the Kittel and the Cavendish, we would have mentioned a rider like that in this list, for example. Is it because they are just not great at all the disciplines that we value that a lot less? Or because they're so honed in on one discipline, you know, being a pure sprinter?
I think if a sprinter won Omloop, Gent Wevelgem, green jersey, 3 Tour de France stages, 2 Paris-Nice, or 2 Tirreno, then we'd be talking. But we didn't have a sprinter nearly like that this year. It was so, I didn't even think about any of them, frankly. It was just a mix. Philipsen was my best, but even he didn't have like a ridiculous season either.
I agree. It's the unfortunate effect of being a sprinter, but it's also the factor that we don't have that top sprinter like back in the days, like when a Cavendish was destroying the Tour de France, when a Kittel was destroying every sprint by like 10 meters. Those were the days for this, and we don't have that right now. Maybe we'll see that in the future, but I currently don't see anyone in the peloton that would start doing that yet, so this might not change in the coming years. Nonetheless, I think that's our list day. We've got Pogacar is the best cyclist in the world. I've got Evenepoel as the most successful one. You've got Pogacar as the most successful one of the year. We named all our things here, but people just need to let us know either on Twitter or in the comment section whether they want that fat pod with the more offshore awards.
I think they could be pretty good, like Milano and Hugo Page, or Hugo Page. How does that compare to
I'm
trying to think. Biggest choke. Does Ineos Giro count for that one? Anyway, maybe pacing on Fadai like that. That's a team car choke.
That's for the next one. If the people want it.
Didn't three guys leave the team? DS's this year from Ineos? It just got announced. I don't know if they were the guys in the Giro car, but yeah. Anyway, that's the next one if it happens. Thanks for listening as always. Thanks to Zwift for supporting this show, and we'll see you later in the week. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.